It's a pleasure to be here and to share with you today something that I'm very passionate about. When I came to Auburn 30 years ago, and I am on an extension appointment, primarily an extension appointment, I adopted some of these experiments because nobody else wanted them. Nobody, and I was fascinated by them. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Dennis Delaney, who is 100% extension. He's our extension soybean specialist at Auburn, and Dr. Kip Balcom, who is with the USDA ARS Soil Dynamics Lab. Dr. Delaney does a lot of the field work, and Dr. Balcom has a lot of the no-till equipment there on campus, because these experiments that I share with you are not on an experiment station. They used to be part of the main station research farm, but that was moved many years ago. So we have to maintain these experiments the best way we can. And so I'm very pleased to share these with you today. To give you an idea of where we're coming from, we're moving to a different part of the country from our previous speakers. No longer are we in the arid west or those deep mollisols of the Midwest. We are on pretty highly erodible, well-drained soils in the deep south, where cotton at one time was king. Both of these experiments are on the campus of Auburn University in East Central Alabama. They're only a few hundred feet apart, but one of them is actually on a Piedmont soil, a Pacolet sandy loam, and the other one is on a very typical loamy sand coastal plain soil. We're sitting right on top of the fall line between the Piedmont Plateau and the coastal plain, so we have a mixture of soils in this area. If someone were to ask me, after being at Auburn for 30 years, what is the one thing I'm most proud of, and I would have to say getting both of these experiments on the National Register of Historical Places. Back in the late 80s, the old rotation experiment, which is the oldest continuous cotton study in the world and one of the oldest studies with cover crops in the world. But it was threatened with campus development, and the president wanted to put a dormitory right where the old rotation was. And our dean asked me, what can we do about it? And I said, the first thing you can do is check with the State Historical Commission and see if we can get it on the National Register. And it was a breeze with no problem. It doesn't assure protection of the experiment, but it also would be rather embarrassing for a president of the university to put a dormitory on top of a national historical monument. So the other experiment we call the colors rotation, which is a few hundred feet away on an entirely different soil, is the oldest soil fertility study in the South. It too was threatened a few years ago when campus administration wanted to put a new art museum right on top of the colors rotation experiment, and they contacted me and wanted to know, the first thing they wanted to know, could we move the plots? Yeah, they said, why can't you move? Why can't you move the plots? And I said, well, at Oklahoma, they did manage to move the Magruder plots, and my hat's off to them, but it's not the same experiment if you have to dig up the soil and move it to a different location. But this experiment is even more important to me as a soil fertility specialist, because it is the oldest soil fertility experiment in the South. The second oldest cotton experiment involving cotton in the world, and we think this was on the site where in the 1880s Professor George Atkinson discovered that potassium was critical to the growth and maturity of cotton, that it was an essential nutrient for cotton as well as other crops. The old rotation sits right almost near the center of campus. Now, it's only three blocks from the center of campus. I took this picture in early September of this year from a UAV, and I think the real importance of it is preserves agricultural history. And we have tried over the years, just like our other speakers today have pointed out, to keep it relevant, to continue to change it and make the information that's coming from this experiment relevant today. The other experiment, the colors rotation, is named for the person who owned the land, the farmer, in 1911 when this experiment was established. It's a much larger experiment. Notice that none of these experiments, again, it was before the days of agricultural statistics. They are not replicated. It was the way things were done then. But this experiment is actually replicated in that there are three tiers. The fertility treatments go all the way across the tiers. And I'll come back to this picture later and maybe describe some of these treatments that we're seeing here. But it is a cotton, corn, soybean rotation with wheat planted, double crop with soybean. So we have five crops in over the period of 3 years. And it's an outstanding site for teaching students because it's right there on campus. And I don't know anywhere else in the world that you can go and see severe nutrient deficiencies, classical nutrient deficiencies, on five crops over the period of a course of a year. But you can do it on this site. To understand these experiments, we have to understand a little history of the Deep South. And let's go back more than 100 years to the late 1800s. Cotton was king in the South. In Alabama alone, we had over 4 million acres of cotton and probably 4 million acres of corn, because for every acre of cotton, you had to have an acre of corn, because that's how they fed themselves. I'm told that you could take a train from Montgomery, Alabama, to Atlanta, Georgia, and the whole landscape looked like this. You would not find a tree, except maybe in the creek bottoms and around homesteads. Today, if you take Interstate 85 from Montgomery to Atlanta, you won't see a field. You'll see all pine trees. So all that land has been replaced with trees. 4 million acres of cotton 120 years ago. Today, there are only a little more than 1 million acres of all crops combined in the state of Alabama. Yet we're still producing about the same amount of cotton. Cotton had been grown for almost 100 years by the turn of the 19th century. The land was plowed in the fall, left fallow during the winter. That was the way it had always been done. But with in our part of the world, with 52 plus inches a year, rain a fall a year, over 1,400 millimeters of rain a year, we have severe erosion. Very little fertilizers were used at that time. The land was plowed, it was planted, it was plowed, it was planted, it was continuous cotton, maybe corn in a few areas. And this practice was taking its toll on the land and the people that worked the land. We were in a depression in the 1890s. A lot of people were looking for alternatives, but there was no alternative. We could not make the corn yields that you can make in Illinois and Missouri, and cotton was the only thing they could grow, so they continued to grow it. I was doing a cotton survey about 10 years ago and found this scene on the edge of a modern cotton field, the results of that era of severe soil erosion from continuous cotton production. In the 1890s, there was a young professor at the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Alabama, which later became Alabama Polytechnic Institute, and today we know it as Auburn University. It was J.F. Duggar, and he had a vision. He said in one of he wrote several textbooks on farming in the Deep South, and in one of his books he wrote that agriculture will come unto its own when our fields are green in winter. I thought that was a profound statement, especially for the 1890s, when there was no such thing as a green field in winter. You plowed your land. You left it fallow. That's the only way you could grow cotton. But he had this vision, and he established this experiment on the outskirts of the little college there where he worked to test his theories. And today we know it as the old rotation. Sometime in the 1930s was the first time I saw that term actually in print, referring to this experiment as the old rotation. I don't know what his objectives were. I have not found any documentation written down of what he was looking for, but you can pretty well deduct that he wanted to look at crop rotations to improve yields, because those were the treatments that he had, cotton corn rotations with and without winter legumes. He wanted to look at cover crops and see what effect they would have to improve yields. And today, of course, we use it as a field laboratory for sustainable agriculture. Sustainable agriculture was not in their vocabulary 120 years ago, but today that's a term we use. This is an interesting shot that, again, this was taken this past September from a little UAV flying over the plots. And notice that the first plot there is, the first three plots are all identical. The first three plots that you see going across, and the difference is the left-hand side is we started irrigation in 2003, and the right-hand side is non-irrigated. The plots were very large, so we could split them and install irrigation on there. Up until then, until 2003, it was an entirely non-irrigated experiment. But the first three plots, plot one, two, and three here, are all identical. Continuous cotton since 1896. The only difference is plots two and three have had a winter legume planted every year. And that is the only source of nitrogen. Now, all the plots have gotten treatments of phosphorus and potassium over the years. In fact, two and three, the only difference in plot two and three is the time of the P and K application. In the early days of the experiment, Professor Duggar noted that there was a distinct advantage to putting the phosphorus and the potassium out ahead of the winter legume cover crop, usually crimson clover or hairy vetch, and we still use those today, as opposed to putting the P and K out on the cotton crop. Well, farmers had fertilizer, they put it out on their cash crop, but he distinctly showed that there's an advantage to putting it out on the winter cover crop, because these soils were very low in phosphorus, very low in potassium, and the legume responded to the P and K, thus producing more nitrogen. So the only difference there in the first three plots is the fact that plots two and three have nitrogen from the winter cover crop. Also, the difference in today, we know it's a difference in soil organic matter. Plot one has about 0.5% soil organic matter, not organic carbon, but organic matter. Plots two and three are around 1.5 to 2%. That's pretty low, but that's typical for our area. We did a cotton survey about 10 years ago. Well, it was the survey I was taking when I took that picture. And we found that the average farmer's field has about a 0.4% soil organic matter, not carbon, but soil organic matter in central Alabama. And as I'll show you later, that is definitely unsustainable. I took this picture last summer, towards the end of the summer, looking at plot six and seven. Plot six on your right is both of these plots are identical, except plot six is again like plot one. It's continuous cotton, no winter cover crops, no nitrogen fertilizer. Plot seven is a cotton corn rotation, no nitrogen fertilizer, but it does have a winter legume cover crop every year. The last few years we've been planting a new variety of hairy vetch. Notice the yields there. The plot on the right last year produced 520 kilograms of lint per acre, about a bale of cotton for those of you that are familiar with cotton. The plot on the left produced over 2,300 kilograms per hectare of lint. That's over four bales of cotton, a pretty impressive yield for any Alabama farmer, and we did it without any fertilizer nitrogen. We do have plots that get fertilizer nitrogen, and they did almost that well. As I said, this is just a shot taken in late March showing the crimson clover cover crop. You know, we're hearing a lot today, a lot of new interest in cover crops, particularly from those of you from the Midwest and the Western states. We've known about cover crops in the Deep South for well over 120 years. So the problem has been getting our producers to use them. We also, at this point in time, we were planting rye as a cover crop following corn, and you can see rye in the background. In 1997, we converted the plots to keep them relevant again from conventional till to conservation tillage. up for the first 100 years of this experiment, it was the cover crops were tilled under, the land was moldboard plowed, disc and chiseled, but since 1997, it's been under essentially no-till. There's been no inversion tillage on these plots for the last 17 years, and the differences are dramatic. But before I get to that, I'll just give you, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on data, because sometimes pictures are worth a lot more than looking at data, but these are just some of the yields that we've seen since we installed irrigation in 2003. And the response to the rotations are about the same as the with or without irrigation. Of course, where we apply, this is the cotton, just cotton yields, and this is the average over the last 11 years of this is the plot that I showed you with no nitrogen, no cover crop. This is with the cover crop. And with the two-year cotton-corn rotation with the cover crop, and the two-year cotton-corn rotation with the cover crop plus fertilizer nitrogen. This is the three-year rotation with, that's cotton-corn followed by wheat, and wheat followed by soybeans. And the reason those yields are lower is because no nitrogen was applied to that rotation until about 5 years ago. So we're averaging it over a period of time when no nitrogen was applied. We realize that you're not going to produce decent corn yields without some fertilizer nitrogen. So since then, we've changed. And the last treatment since the 1950s has been nitrogen only. The way farmer, no cover crops, just continuous cotton with only nitrogen fertilizer. And we're getting some decent yields. Soil quality, when we start looking at soil quality, we see some dramatic differences there. That's what farmers are pretty much doing these days. Irrigation makes a significant difference in cotton, but the interesting thing is that over the last 11 years, we've seen a positive response to irrigation, only six of the last 11 years. Two of those years, we saw a negative response to irrigation. And three of the years were no response to irrigation. But overall, over the average, there is a significant positive response to irrigation. With corn, we've seen a response to irrigation 10 of the last 11 years. A very significant response to irrigation. And of course, you're not going to grow corn without some nitrogen fertilizer, as our previous speakers have noted. But we can produce a crop with just using a winter legume. We just won't get the highest yields. And wheat and wheat is never irrigated. In fact, too much water can be a problem on our wheat in the south. But the soybeans are always double cropped with wheat, and we do see a significant yield response 11 of the past 11 years of growing soybeans. Almost no soybeans in the state of Alabama are irrigated. Just to give you an idea of the trends over the years, I picked one of the treatments, treatment number 8, which is continuous cotton with only a winter legume fertilizer, another one of those treatments there. And it sort of tells a history of agriculture in the Deep South. Starting in the 1911, when the boll weevil first entered the state of Alabama, you saw a dip in yields. During World War II, for whatever reason, probably management, we saw a dip in yields. After World War II, we see an increase in P and K rates that we use, and nitrogen fertilizers came upon the scene. Then in the mid 70s, we lost DDT, a very effective pesticide on cotton. It was lost, that was when the experiment station was moved from campus to another location, and then, of course, management suffered. And then, of course, I came on board about 1984, and you see the yields have just gone out of sight since then. So, but really, we attribute that primarily to the fact that we're using GMOs and we have adopted conservation tillage. It's been phenomenal to see the yield increase. And yields are the primary data that has been taken off this experiment. We have taken soil samples since the 50s, but prior to then, no soil samples were archived, and no soil samples were even taken prior to the 50s. But in starting in the 80s, we started looking at soil organic carbon, and this happens to be just converting that to soil organic matter. And one of the interesting observations was that if you looked at relative yield, just assigned a relative yield to one of the plots and compared everything to it, there was a really good relationship, not a high R square, but I've not seen these type of data before, but there seems to be a really distinct relationship between soil organic carbon in these at this site and yield potential. And I mentioned earlier that in our survey, the average, hard time seeing the mouse, the error here, but well, anyway, remember I said 0.4% was the average soil organic matter from our cotton fields? These farmers technically, according to the old rotation, should not be producing anything. This got us starting to think about about this time soil quality issues were coming on, and we're using this experiment now in an attempt to develop a soil quality index for our fields in the state of Alabama, using primarily soil organic matter. But by the mid 20th century, Professor Frank Davis, who was managing this experiment, noted that cotton as a crop does not deplete the soil or run it down excessively, as most farmers thought. The cultural practices of leaving the land bare through the winter and not preventing erosion are responsible for the generally low fertility level of many soils on which cotton is grown. As I mentioned, in 1997, we switched the entire, with the help of the soil dynamics lab, we switched the entire experiment over from conventional tillage to conservation tillage, looking at just using the Russell in calculations for continuous cotton. The plot that gets fertilizer nitrogen only was losing 8 tons per acre per year. Tolerance for this soil was about 5 tons per acre per year. You can actually see on some of the plots, you can see the effect of soil erosion in just walking across the plots. Where we just grow a winter legume, no other practice but planting a winter legume, we've brought that down to 6.1 tons per acre. But since we switched to conservation tillage with no soil inversion, the fertilizer nitrogen only plot is down to 5.1 tons at T, and the winter legumes is down to 3.3 tons per acre, much below T. And we're really seeing that. Those are some of the things that we're doing with the old rotation to keep it relevant. The colors rotation right across the street is that fertility experiment. I'll just give you just a few quick pictures of this experiment. Again, this was the one that was started in 1911 on the farm of Mr. J.A. Colors. In the 1930s, the university bought it, the property, from the heirs of Mr. Colors, and this experiment has been continued ever since. It was one, when it was established, it was one of over 200 soil fertility experiments put on farmers' fields all over the state in 1911. I can't imagine someone managing over 200 experiments across the state on farmers' fields the days before they had highways. You had to travel by train, and this is just this image was taken in early September this year from a little UAV. And just to point out some of the treatments, of course, the one that are really obvious is this treatment right across here. That's a treatment that gets no lime. It's never received any lime. Now, we're on acid, well-drained soils. pH of this soil is about 4.5. Nothing grows, not cotton, not corn, not soybeans. This was the site, as I mentioned earlier. Oops. This was the site where potash deficiency was discovered, and having trouble with the mouse here. Oh yeah. And Noquet was a big part of this experiment when it was started, and it still is. These are the Noquet plots. Soltes K is about 13, using Malic-1 extract, is about 13 milligrams per kilogram, parts per million, in these plots, and cotton produces nothing. This plot here is a third of the standard K rate that we apply, and you can see dramatic potash deficiencies on this particular treatment, and some of the other treatments receive the full rate of potassium. But it's a great potassium study, and I have a poster downstairs showing some of the long-term effects of potassium fertilization on these plots down to 1 meter depth that we've recently taken from these plots. No phosphorus. Soil test phosphorus is about 2 parts per million using Malic-1 extract. This is the interesting treatment across here. I call these our know-nothing plots. They were numbered A, B, and C because they were established in 1915, 3 years after the rest of the experiment was established. But this treatment here has received nothing. No nitrogen, no phosphorus, no potassium, no lime, nothing. But crops have been planted on it, and it's been interesting to see how the yields have declined to about 20, 30 years ago. We stopped getting anything off of them. We don't even bother to harvest. We still plant, but nothing. The seeds might germinate, and that's the end of it. This is a loamy sand soil, a very classic coastal plain soil, where we are growing a lot of cotton in our state. And this is one of the standard treatments, and we also have a treatment down here that gets the standard NPK sulfur treatment and no micronutrients, with micronutrients. All the rest do not receive micronutrients. So it's a very comprehensive little soil fertility experiment, unlike any others that I've seen anywhere else in the country. And it's right on campus. In fact, one of the challenges we had was when the new art museum, which you see to the right here, was being built about 10 years ago, and that's when they wanted us to move the plots. But I was invited to the president's office to discuss this issue when we were trying to get it on the National Register of Historical Places, and he asked me what effect would keeping this experiment here have on the new art museum. And I said, sir, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you, what effect is the art museum going to have on our 100-year-old experiment? The conversation ended. That's why it has been a very nice, it's complemented each other very well to have this historic experiment with cotton, corn, soybeans, wheat there adjacent to a modern art museum and the landscaping. They really appreciate it, and they have a big poster inside the art museum with handouts about the colors rotation experiment. This is showing the no-lime treatment to your left on soybeans, and the conventional treatment on your right with no lime. And that's on your extreme right is your no-K on soybeans. Note that the classic textbook potassium deficiency on soybeans. These are the no-P plots on cotton there. And you really don't see a dramatic difference there. Those of you that like to use the classic textbook phosphorus deficiency on corn and soybeans, we don't see it there. But what you do see is a darker green plant, and the yields are considerably reduced. And these are some of the no-K plots on cotton. And actually, this was taken several years ago versus the conventional treatment to your left there. Actually, we get no yield today. Nothing is produced where no potassium is applied. So I think these experiments, these two long-term experiments that involve cotton and other crops, has helped us to preserve a bit of our agricultural history. But the key, I think, to maintaining these plots is to keep the data relevant. Changing the treatments, changing the scope of the experiment to fit the things that are relevant today, such as we're using it to develop the soil quality index for our farmers to use in the state. We have switched to conservation tillage. We are looking at irrigation. Only about 10% of our fields in Alabama are irrigated. compared to our neighbors in Georgia and Mississippi, where probably 70 or 80% of their fields are irrigated. We have lots of rain, and we felt that was sufficient. But now we're seeing evidence that, yes, irrigation will it has a definite benefit. And we're able to show it on field days and students and visitors to campus. It's right there on campus. Notice in this picture, you don't see anything else around. You see no other evidence of agriculture anywhere in this picture here. Campus development on the right, parking deck. There's a big building that went up behind us. But we've been able to maintain this experiment because it is relevant, and it's a great opportunity for teaching, for tours, and just for talking. We had a huge cotton tour there in August, and many farmers that didn't even know it existed marveled that you can walk across some of these plots. You can see the difference in the soil quality. You can stick a soil sampling cube in there, and you can feel the difference in soil quality without having to do any measurements on it. And you can certainly see it in the yields, as you see in the picture here. If you want to see more information about either of these two experiments, I have two posters over in the convention center that you can visit. And I'd like to, our support comes primarily from the Alabama wheat and feed grains producers, the Alabama soybean producers, and the Alabama Cotton Commission. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.